Hi everyone, and welcome to Filmmaking Life Podcast. I'm your host, Alexandra Dawn, and I'm here with Nick. And in this episode, we're going to talk with a KeyCast travel filmmaker, creating content around the world and inspiring with his unique way of telling stories. And at some point, he made the craziest travel video intros I have ever seen. People, shout out for Ben TK. Hey man, what's good?
Hey guys, how are you? I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to chat about a lot of different things. Let's go.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've seen your latest video from India and I had goosebumps. It was one of the craziest things I have ever seen lately on YouTube space. And because of that, I really want to talk about how you create those amazing videos. And I really want to go a little bit in depth on the steps that you take into generating and creating those amazing type of content. For people that don't know you, I just want you to give us a little short presentation about yourself so people can know better what you do and what you are.
No worries. So my name is Ben Kalsovic. I've grown up in Australia in the city of Melbourne. I've lived here, I'm 27. I've lived here my entire life. And before I got into filmmaking, I was actually a tradie. I was doing carpentry and cabinet making for around 5 to 6 years. Towards the last 3 years, I picked up a camera and just loved filming everything. Like I love to make, I like to just mess around with friends and make short, funny videos. And then I started to get some work from those videos and got into nightclubs. And from there, I discovered YouTube and discovered travel filmmaking and discovered a lot of people doing really well and making a living from it. So I decided to do the same thing. And yeah, the things just took off from there and went really well. I've got a younger brother, a younger sister. What else can I say about myself? I don't know. I think that's, yeah, nice. That's the basics of it. Yeah.
So you basically chased out your dreams and your dreams now became reality somehow. And the cool thing is that you do those adventures with your family because your brother also shoots with you and helps you out in your trips, right?
Yeah, he's for a lot of my client jobs overseas, he's been a backup cameraman for me. But he's like very passionate about filmmaking and he's mostly into music. But yeah, he comes on with a lot of adventures with me and hikes and just takes his camera. We take photos and videos and yeah, we work together a lot. We're hoping to do a lot more together this year. Seeing as we can't travel much at the moment, we're going to do a few trips around Australia and around home. So yeah.
I'm pretty sure you can be amazed on what you can find in your backyard when it comes to traveling because we all look up to those high-end locations that we want to go, but we tend to forget that our backyard can have as much potential as other high-end locations, right?
It's funny, actually. We always sort of, because we've seen like landscapes so many times around where we live, and we don't see them as that special. And because we're always wanting to travel and see these other beautiful places because we consider them to be so different and out there, but they could be like very oversaturated to the people that live in that area as well. And yeah, I was just talking with my brother the other day and he said that, you know, it's probably really beneficial to film in your own backyard or your own area because a lot of people around the world may not have seen those environments before, even though you have all the time. So I guess this whole situation is really allowing us to see where we live with new eyes and really appreciate what's there. And yeah, I've never been more excited to see my home now. So keen to get out more.
And yeah. I think if you like can film your own country or your own location differently and show people those location with a different mindset and a different vision, then you can really appreciate those location better.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. I agree with that, yeah.
But I think this is really challenging because it's really challenging to be creative with something that you are very used to.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging to think outside the box and come up with new ideas. But I mean, that's all part of it. It's all part of the fun. It's all part of growing. So even though we've seen some locations around where I live so many times, capturing them in new ways, it's kind of fun, you know. And I haven't actually captured them properly before, so it's exciting to actually go out there with the mindset to really make something of the places around home that I haven't really respected, I guess, as much as I should have.
Yeah, I feel you. So I'm really curious, when you think about going in a different country and you think about shooting something there, how do you plan your shoots? Or do you know from back home what you're going to do? Or does your inspiration come on the fly?
It really depends on the goal that we're heading towards when we go to make a travel video. Like, if we're going to make like a really, like, we're definitely sure that we're going to go make a banger of a travel video. What I like to do is I like to plan as much as I can before I head over. Even like try and just look up images, watch videos on YouTube about the country and get an idea of what things look like, what we might come across. And then we can plan out, you can plan out in your mind what transitions or cool stories and things you can put into the video. Actually, the end of video that I just posted recently, I came up with a huge script to write for a really cool, it was actually the way it turned out and the way I planned is totally different. Had a crazy story, but again, like when you get there, everything changes. Like time changes, locations aren't as you seem, people aren't able to help on the day and things like that. So you just have to improvise. But it's always good to start with a plan and then you can still follow it like little bits and pieces, but you don't always have to stick completely to it. But yeah, I always try and plan like as much as I can. That way it's less stressful. And when I'm editing, I know what's going to go where and things go quite smoothly. But that India trip was it was so off plan that it had to be improvised most of it. I think the only thing I did plan was to do a holy festival sequence, but everything after that was just pretty random and had to come up with in post, which does take, it took so much longer, but yeah. Sometimes things don't go to plan, but just got to work with it.
Yeah, it's crazy because like one of the things that I fear the most if I had to travel and film is getting actors or trying to talk with people into appearing in my video. So for example, that is really impressive on your videos because you have a lot of shots with people that I'm pretty sure you kind of coordinated and directed all those shots. So you had to talk with those people and tell them what to do and what not to do. And how do you manage those situations?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's always good to let people know what you want to do before you do it. That way it's like everyone's got the same idea on the day. Before I went to India, I had a group chat and I was actually trying to find some actors. So I had like 12 people in a group chat and I was trying to meet up with them in Delhi. We were kind of like working together to pick locations. So on the day, a lot of those people couldn't come and I actually arrived so late into the Delhi city because immigration took like 2 hours to get through. And I was, yeah, my plans just exploded. And then I finally got to the hostel. And after that, I realized the meetup location was so far away. So I was like 3 hours late to meet these people. And then I was actually so surprised about like 10 people or so still turned up. And we went to this location and we were able to film this sequence with, there was the girl on the balcony. So she helped us out with a few shots. And there was a lot of other people there too that didn't get seen, but they were just like having fun taking photos and doing their own thing. And the only other planned actor we had, obviously we had two other filmmakers with us. We had Eric Heidenfalk. He was with us. We had Vunky. I don't know Vunky's last name, but two friends filmmaking. So they were able to help us out with a lot of shots as well and help acting, do acting stuff for us. But if you notice in that video, there's like an older traditional guy at the beginning, and he also finishes off the video. We were really lucky with that actually, because we met someone at a hostel, and he said he had an Indian friend, and they knew each other because they both own dogs. He works as a veterinarian, and they got in contact that way, which is really cool. But he said, hey, you want to come meet him? We could probably get some footage of him. He'd be happy to help. And it was just this perfect day where we went down to the boat down in Varanasi, and the river was beautiful, lots of people. And he was happy for us to take a little boat ride to the other side of the river, get some shots of him. We spent like half an hour filming, and everything just worked out, you know. He knew what the plan was, and he was happy to help. And I think sometimes random things happen that just really work out for you. That's how that went down. And everyone else I filmed, pretty much just asked them if I could get shots of them. Some were a bit Heidi candid, because there were just perfect moments happening, and once they're gone, they're gone. But yeah, that's how it went down with filming those people.
Cool. That's amazing. I mean, that sounds easier than I thought, because obviously things turn out for you better, because like people might have gone mad because waiting so long and might have been a little bit upset and go home, but it seems that people want to do stuff. So
I didn't think there was going to be anybody there, but I was like, I kept him in the chat. I'm like, I'm coming, guys. I'm coming. Like, just give me 10 more minutes. I was happy they stuck around.
That is actually one of my most stressful situations that I have when filming with a lot of people, because I don't really like to hold people more than they need to stay. And whenever you work with a crowd of people and you tell them it's going to take only half an hour and it obviously takes like 2 hours, then you're getting stressed.
Yeah, it always takes longer than you think too. Yeah. Like every time, it always takes longer.
I think we really need to, this is one of the things that I try my best to do, and I try to manage my time better. And for you as a travel filmmaker, I think it's really important to manage your time, because you're spending like 1 week or maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 days in a location, and you have to get all your shots, and you have to be like really managed in time to like take all the shots, right?
Yeah, you've really got to... You've got to allow extra time too, because you can't plan for weather. I think that's one thing that has cut me down a lot of times. For example, the Philippines, luckily I had a whole month in the Philippines. It was more like a fun trip, and I was also trying to make a video at the same time. We got rained on like half the time we were over there. So we're actually lucky we had a month there and we're able to collect a lot of dry weather footage. But you've really got to allow almost an extra week for weather and just things that go like traveling. You don't always think about how long it's going to take to get from place to place. You know, trains might be delayed. It was really hard for us to find transport in India sometimes, and things kind of run on their own time. Things rock up late, and you just got to roll with it. So definitely got to allow some more time for things to go wrong. That way you're less stressed and things work out a lot better for sure.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm really curious on, what filmmaking equipment you used to film the Magic of India video.
Yeah, of course. So I've always been a Sony shooter, just basically because it's the first camera I picked up was a Sony, so I've just stuck with it. But I used the Sony A7 III, and it's pretty Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. Like, I mean, the colors aren't too bad. The dynamic range is amazing and the autofocus is very, very good. So it's been a really good, reliable camera for me. And with that, I usually use a 16 to 35 2.8 lens. This is just like my everything lens, run and gun. It's always on my main camera. And then I've got a 1.8 55 millimeter, which is, it doesn't get used as much as it should, but, yeah, it can get you some really beautiful bokeh shots. And then I've got a macro lens, which is, I actually wasn't sure if I should take it because you can only fit so much into your bag. But it got me some really dope shots in India, some real cool close-ups and compressed shots. And I had my Zhiyun Crane 2, which has been my trusty gimbal for quite a long time now, actually. I think I've had that for like 2 to 3 years and it's been killing it. Yeah. And my Mavic, I've got a Mavic 2 Pro. That's been my main drone for a while. And a Rode shotgun mic. What else is in that bag? Just a ton of batteries, I guess. Lots of charging gear. Yeah, I think that's about it for like the main gear I use. Yeah, does a good job.
Do you have some advice on people that use Sony cameras for traveling? Do you use any certain color profile that it's easier to grade since the camera shoots only 8-bit?
Yeah, so I think I'm definitely an S-Log3 user just because the dynamic range is incredible. And it's fun when you can get all the brightness and the darkness quite even in the shot. It does kind of like, I shoot 120 FPS constantly. That's like my standard shooting because you never know what you're going to slow down and what you're going to speed up. And when you shoot 120 in 8-bit, the image can fall apart quite easy. So you've really got to be careful with exposing things properly. If you underexpose something, try and bring it back up. Like there was a lot of shots in the India video where we're filming Holi Festival and we could barely even see the screen. We had like a plastic bag around the camera and we're just like, you know, improvised shooting. We have no idea what, like, we're just hoping all the exposures are right. We can only just see. So there was a lot of recovering in that video. You probably won't notice because there's a lot of quick shots, but yeah, you just got to shoot carefully if you're going to use, the 8-bit S-Log3.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's a great camera, like for the price. I think it's definitely worth it. If you're like going into bigger films and things like that, you might want to consider something with a bit better quality, like a 10-bit color camera, which would be beautiful. I wish Sony would do that. But yeah, I still love this camera. I mean, I'm looking to upgrade soon and get into some better quality images, but for the moment, it's been great, definitely.
And I think it has like a very practical form factor that allows you to be light when traveling. And
yeah. That's one of its biggest ticks, I think. Like it's so light. It's super small. Like I can fit two of them in my bag if I need to. And yeah, like just pulling it out, like it's yeah, I mean, it's so practical. And the gimbals too. Like I can have it sitting on a gimbal in my bag and just open my bag and pull it straight out with everything ready to go, which I absolutely love the portability of the Sony cameras. They've absolutely nailed that. So yeah. Yeah, good. It's a good camera. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting one. I have bigger Sony cameras like Sony FS7 and FX9, but yeah. I don't have a smaller one because I used to use a smaller camera for photography. And okay. I was using the Canon 5D Mark IV, which is amazing for photos, but it doesn't have that much dynamic range as a Sony A7 for different for photography and also for video. So let's switch a little bit to creativity, because in your video you have a lot of creative transition and some of them I'm just blown away because I'm still looking at the video and I'm thinking, how the hell did you manage to do those? So I'm really curious on your process on thinking about transition and actually making them. How do you approach a transition effect?
Yeah, of course. I think one huge factor is the total amount of knowledge that you have with editing and filmmaking will allow you to see what you see. So the more you know and the more you learn about editing itself will allow you to see new things when you go out and film. So when I was filming in India, for example, I noticed a couple of doors and I like to do the door opening effect. So I just filmed walking up to the door and trying to get like a long shot enough for it to open. And then I knew I'd do that later with something. It's funny, actually, there's a shot in there with, there's a tuk-tuk that's like an Indian little taxi thing. And I made it smash through one of the doors and I didn't plan for that. I just sort of, when you watch the footage over and over and over and you're like, suddenly sometimes you can just click and see something and be like, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I could do that. And you sort of have to know in your mind that it is going to work. At least like 60 to 70%, I know I can edit this and it can work. Otherwise it might, I mean, it won't be a waste of time. It'd be good practice. It probably won't look good, but like it's good practice. But yeah, so I knew I could do it and I just figured it out and yeah, it went really well. So I think a lot of the creativity is like half of it is honestly just looking at it in post and seeing what matches up, what movements match up, what colors match up. But the best creative ideas are the ones I feel like that you plan and actually film to edit rather like do it that way. They usually turn out way better. I can't think right now if there's anything that I actually really, any transitions I really filmed or really planned to film in India. I think, yeah.
Yeah. So basically it's related to the fact that you gain experience and because of your experience, your mind obviously recognizes when a shot is transition worthy, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to describe it. Like the total of my editing knowledge allows me to see what I see. So the more you learn, the more you'll see. So it's just a matter of continuing to learn. And I mean, if you learn different kinds of editing, you're going to come up with different kinds of transitions that other people don't necessarily have the knowledge to do. So it doesn't matter where you learn your editing skills, if it's a bit different, like it'll make you see different things and become a different kind of editor. So everything I do now is just a sum total of everything I've learnt, every video I've watched. And yeah, it's just allowed me to see that way, I guess. And I mean, it helps to have a creative mind too, like being open to trying new things and just imagining what would be really cool to make. So yeah, keep creative, I guess.
Yeah. I was actually looking at the shot of the tuk-tuk when you talked about it, and I still don't get how you made it work. it's really crazy. I seen you added some effect, like the tuk-tuk is hitting the door, right? A little bit of
bit of sparks.
Yeah, sparks. That's really cool. And I'm really curious when you go into editing and you have obviously all your footage. I'm pretty sure you are by now really good at organizing the footage and put them into like days or maybe, I don't know, categories. But one of the things that I'm really curious, what's your first process that you do when you go into the editing software? What do you do?
So that's a good question. So when I'm starting a blank project, what I like to have first, which never happens, is I like to have the perfect audio, like the perfect song, perfect music, all ready to go. Like honestly, if you can find the music you want before you even start editing, you're on such a head start. Like you're on a massive head start to your project. The indie video was such a struggle with music. I couldn't find the perfect song anywhere. So I just went through my playlists, of artists that I liked on, or just my music, and, chucked in some of those songs. 'Cause you can use artists' music on YouTube. You just can't earn money from it if you do that. It's like a, if you use an artist song, they get the revenue from ads. So that's how you can do that. But music is how I would like to start. But usually I know in my mind what shots I captured. Like I know all my best shots, and I sort of like go through the folders because I do label them from like day one, and then the location, and then in that folder will be like camera one or camera two, drone, and so it'll be everything from that day. And pictures, I used to put pictures in the folders, but now I just put pictures in one picture folder outside because it's just like I hate digging in when I edit photos to find those pictures. But I sort of put in all my best shots in Premiere, and then I play it out that way. And then I don't know, it's kind of funny the way I do it. I don't do it from like the start clip and then go all the way through every single clip and then just pick the best shots. Like I just go off memory of what I know I'm definitely going to use. And then if I feel like I need more footage or I need more story or more shots to tell the story, I'll just go back into my footage and find other ones that would help tell the story. I just try to use all my best shots, really. That's the best I can explain.
You basically remember all the shots that you like at the time thought that are really good and awesome, and when you go to editing, you already have a little bit of vision on what you want to make based on that shots.
Yeah, definitely. Like the ideas already start forming when you start filming. So you sort of have an idea when you get to the editing room what you're going to do and what shots you're going to put with what. There's usually like a couple of connecting shots for each shot. So like there might be one really amazing shot we got, and then there's like two shots around that, different angles that are definitely going to be next to it. And actually, I edit a lot on the go too. Like maybe I'm just obsessed, or I don't know, but each day, like I sort of just like to come back from a shoot, rest, put my footage on the computer. But then I just love to like put the footage in the timeline and cut up the best parts of that day. And like it's fresh in my mind then too. And actually, this is a huge tip, because if you do that, you can actually see what you're missing, like what you need to get from the trip, and then what you don't need any more of. It's really good to keep track of having enough good content. So I think that's a cool way to do it. I mean, you don't have to do it that way, but I love editing. So
yeah, I think it's a very good.
I edit and brush my teeth sometimes.
It's a very good advice, honestly, because like you said, if you are missing something, then you can still shoot it because you're there. But if you get home and start editing and you miss some shots, then you're pretty much screwed because you cannot go back.
Yeah, exactly. Like it helps so much. So you don't have to do it, but it really does help if you're serious about making, the perfect travel video that you have in your mind.
So are you an overshooter, or you're shooting just enough?
Oh, I like that question. That's a good one, actually. When I started, I was definitely an overshooter. I was shooting everything. Like, I think it was more like worrying about not getting enough content, so you just shoot as much as you can. This was like way back when I was starting, but now I'm very conservative. Like I'll only shoot good shots. Sometimes I won't shoot, like I can go out a whole day and only shoot about 10 clips because I know what I'm looking for. I know what looks good. I know what I'm gonna need. Like it's all practice. Like the more shoots you do, you just really get the hang of it and know what to look for and what looks beautiful and what doesn't. Yeah, I mean, it's just experience, really. You get better and better as you go. You get an eye for it.
Yeah, I think if you overshoot, you're kind of killing your creativity. Because for me, when I go to editing, and if I have less shots, I tend to be more creative with the edit. But if I have like tons of shots, I'm like overwhelmed and I don't really know what to do with them.
Yeah, it's a struggle. I think when you have so much footage, like it just takes so long to look through it all, and you can get your best shots mixed up. But I think that it comes down to experience. It's just it's kind of an organization thing as well. But yeah, you want to, like, I mean, it's going to happen. Like, if anyone's listening to this, be like, oh man, I'm an overshooter. That's me. Like, don't worry about it. I was an overshooter. So it's just all practice. And yeah, I mean, you just got to learn to choose your shots really carefully. I mean, ultimately, if you can come back at the end of the day and have a heap of beautiful shots and no boring shots, like, that's perfect. That's what I'm aiming for. And yeah.
One question that I have that people might be a little, like, really curious. At some point in the edit, you have one shot where the kids play, I don't know exactly what the game is. It looks like baseball. Cricket, yeah. So at one point, the ball goes in the air. And can you explain the process of that transition?
Because yeah, of course.
I thought it's really cool.
I'm actually going to do a behind the scenes on this one too. So that'll be cool.
Oh, so I picked it right.
Yeah, no, good pick. So actually, let me think. On the day, I didn't actually know what I was going to do. We got a heap of cricket shots. I think we filmed for like an hour just collecting different angles of those kids, which is really cool. And when I got home, I sort of like had a look at the cricket shots, and then I figured out a really good angle that I could edit a ball shooting off into the air and then following it with a camera. So one of the first things to do there was, actually, this was so freaking complicated, I don't even want to, like, I don't even know if I had to make it as complicated as it was, but for those who know what a photo parallax is, like when a photo is moving but it shows depth, it was kind of like that as it zoomed into the cricket ball. So I created this video parallax, but you can only notice it with a kid in the building, which is cool. Like, you can see the 3D-ness. It's just so it doesn't look like a fake zoom when you zoom in straight away and everything scales up proportionally.
Yeah.
It's so the kid can zoom and then the building after, so you can see behind. But that took, I think that took me like 3 or 4 hours just to pick every piece out. And it's for 1 second that you can barely even notice. And I was just thinking, like, was that worth it? Oh, well, whatever. It is what it is. But for the actual cricket ball, I have a little turntable thing at home. I don't know what you call it. It's like a thing you put food on and you spin it around and you can like get different dips or food or whatever. And I put a glass on top with actually use a tennis ball. I put a tennis ball on top because, I knew I could change the tennis ball to yellow, like in post, and make it look like he was actually throwing. Yeah. make it look like he was actually throwing a tennis ball instead of a cricket ball. And I just spun it around on the little spinny turntable thing and put a blue screen behind the green tennis ball, because you can't put a green screen behind a green object. It doesn't really work like that. And then, yeah, I just filmed it. I had the camera stationary, just spun it around in the center. And then in post, took the blue screen out and sped up the ball so it was, you could see it spinning. And I think after that, oh man, I created like some fake clouds and a fake sun, and then like it took me a couple of hours to make everything look realistic and go in the right motion path. It was actually a lot of figuring out myself. Like, I knew I could do it, but I knew it was going to be an absolute pain to try and figure out. Like, a lot of it's physics. Like, you have to know how things look when they fly through areas. So if you've got a good realistic idea of how something would look, it's a lot easier to go about it. But yeah, I just had to manipulate the camera to make the ball look like it was actually moving and shaking through the air, and edited it to bounce off walls and stuff like that, which...
Yeah, I saw that. But I didn't saw the ball bouncing first time I watched edit. I only saw it now.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, damn. Yeah, so... Basically, the video has 4 minutes and 49, and I'm really curious how many days you worked on the edit to make it.
Yeah, I think if we're saying that I worked on it every single day, it would have taken about, I think, close to 3 to 4 weeks at like nonstop working. That would be so maybe just around a month nonstop working, like every single day. But I took a lot of breaks. But like, realistically, I took a lot of time off. Like, I've been exploring with some friends. I've been working on other videos in between, because sometimes working on one video constantly can drive you crazy. And you just, like, if you're watching the same thing over and over and over and you're not getting creative, like, seriously, you just need to put, like, shut your laptop and just go for a walk, take 2 days off, or work on another project, like, even a week, like, come back to it with fresh eyes, and then you'll see new things. You'll be like, oh, my mind's fresh and energized. And new ideas start coming to you. I had to do that so many times through that project because I was just going nuts. Like, it was actually a hard one to figure out. But I mean, it turned out pretty good. Like, I'm happy with how it turned out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think.
Thanks.
Yeah. I really love it. And I think you need even more credit than what you deserve right now for it, because
thanks.
Like I said, it was one of the craziest videos that I've seen lately in quarantine, so
thank you so much.
Big applause for that. And woo. It was also really interesting to find out more insights about it, because it's so amazing how much work you need to put into a 4-minute video, and people back home really need to understand that it's you. Like, whenever you, for example, a lot of people take your video as a source of inspiration, but also as a source of, for example, let's say they try to replicate what you did, and people might be a little bit sad because they can't, but people try to replicate it in a few days, but you spend months on it. So, guys, you have to really understand.
True. Yeah. Like, actually, I've had this conversation with so many creators. Some, like, before I ever met up with anyone else that was doing the same thing, like any of the big creators on YouTube, I always thought that they just had it. You know, they just knew what to do. They were just really efficient, got things done really quick. And it was really funny because the first time I had a conversation with one, they thought the same back with me as well. And they're like, oh man, I thought you just like knew how to do everything, and like you were just able to do it all perfectly, really easy. And I'm like, nah man, it's always a struggle. I'm continuously struggling and pushing myself and you know, learning new things, so many challenges. And we were just like, it was just a weird moment that we both like were the same, you know. And it's funny because all these people you look up to, maybe you feel the same way about them, everyone struggles. Like, there's not one person that makes that kind of content that doesn't struggle. It's it is what it is, you know. That's, we all struggle. It's just a matter of pushing ourselves to keep going and really enjoying what we do, and that helps us to not give up at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of filmmaking, because if it was easy, then it wasn't so attractive. Like, we as humans are attracted to things that aren't easy to get. Like, the best example is women. When you see a nice girl and if the girl is hard to get, then you're obviously going to love her more, right? It's the same with filmmaking.
I mean, it's just a natural instinct. Like, when someone has something better than you, it's only natural that you should like want that too. You know, I mean, how can I explain? Yeah, I mean, like, women, that's the best way to explain it, I think.
Filmmaking is like women, actually, because like programs always crashing, you don't know what's going on.
Should I see Da Vinci or should I see Premiere?
Exactly.
I don't know, man. Like,
you feel bad if you go into Da Vinci.
Cut knocking on the door.
Yeah. Or if you change your camera, you know, your Sony camera might be sad that you should have Blackmagic or any camera.
Yeah, I mean, like, I saw the look on its lens the other day when I was talking about Canon. It wasn't happy with me at all. I think it's not working properly anymore.
You see a little bit of battery drainage there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The batteries have never been the same since that conversation.
Yeah. Crazy. So it was such a crazy conversation, and I'm really happy we did it. Obviously, we can talk about filmmaking for years because you know a lot of stuff, and
definitely
I would be
so many subjects to cover.
Yeah, I would be very happy to have you on the podcast on your next video, or even faster. Maybe we can talk about After Effects or other creative stuff that people might be interested. But so far, I'm really happy with our discussion for today. And
yeah, it's been a really good chat.
Yeah, I just want you to maybe give some advice for people that are starting on their journey to becoming a travel filmmaker.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so if you're looking to become a travel filmmaker, I think one thing really important, I think we were talking about at the very beginning of this podcast, is that don't think that you have to actually travel far in order to collect beautiful content. I mean, the rest of the world might not have seen, like, they might think that the place you live could be like even more beautiful than the place they live. And you might think like vice versa, because you just haven't seen those locations before and they're very desirable because they're new to you. So you could be in a, like, you might think you need to travel, but you could be in a place that's actually perfect for making travel videos or vlogs, that the rest of the world hasn't seen before. So you can travel local and you can still make beautiful content. And that's something I've realized very hardcore over this isolation period. Definitely going to be seeing more of Australia after this. Secondly, I think if you're just starting and you're having struggles with money, because equipment can be really, really expensive, I would recommend, you don't have to have, I mean, it's all about just having a clever idea and upgrading and upgrading and upgrading, like, at your own pace. So you could even run around with a phone and just fit, like, find cool, look, learn about composition, learn about cool angles, and then use your phone to find those things. I think phones these days are pretty damn good. Like, they've got stabilization and 4K, so you could do a lot with them, and some even look like professional DSLRs if you edit them right. But yeah, also like, team up with some friends as well, because it's quite hard to do this stuff by yourself. Like, it's real stressful if you go out and you know, you're asking people to be a part of your video by yourself. It's good to have a bunch of friends to help you out with ideas. You could even start a team channel or something like that to help grow faster and get more content out. And it's always fun when you're working with your friends. Like I work with my brother to film a lot of things. Like, it's so awesome to have him around. So find a bunch of people that are like-minded and, like, get some ideas going, get some passions flowing, and jump out there and make some content. Another thing is just start. Like, don't worry about how famous people are, or that you may, like, that it might take forever to learn those skills. Like, just jump out there and start. I was terrible once. Everyone was terrible once. I didn't know how to use a camera once. So it's all about just jumping in the deep end and having some fun. I think you've got to really, really like it too. Don't just do it to become famous. You can do it to make money, but if you really want to be ultimately successful in it, just make sure that you're super passionate about it, because you'll get through anything, really. You'll just, you know, like a relationship, you want to make it work. So
yeah, that's amazing advice.
I think that's the best I could say. Yeah,
I want to add also a few things. I think it's also very important to add value and story to your projects, and by this I'm referring to the fact that you might give the viewers some informations about the place or the history, or I don't know, things like that the viewer might find attractive and informative, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, value is everything, but it can come in different forms, like teaching somebody, making people feel something, making people laugh, or in captivating somebody within a story. Like, yeah, you should focus your videos on providing value, and obviously just having fun with it too. You got to have fun with it as well. So yeah,
amazing. Yeah, such a really fire talk that we had.
Yeah, it's been an awesome talk. It's been great being on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, and I want to thank you all for joining us and staying here and sharing our podcast with all the world out there. We are amazed on how good the feedback is on our podcast and how excited you guys are to listen to our discussion with one of the biggest creators in the world right now. And I really think this podcast gives such a big value to the community because we talk so many big insights that normally you have to pay or you don't really have access to them unless you're really close friends to the creators. But we are trying to bring those creators closer to you guys so you can learn from their experience and from what they have to say, because those guys have been through a lot and they know this business more than anyone. So with all this being said, I really want to thank you again for tuning in to this amazing podcast that we are doing, and just want to let you guys know that I'm really happy to have you guys here. And until next time, stay close, follow us on Instagram, and yeah, peace out.